It's Central Time. I'm Chris Molina.
And I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we talk with the leader of a Dane County group that's working on the issue of affordable housing.
First, Sesame Street has a new character. Her name is Carly, and she lives with foster parents Clem and Dahlia, who she refers to as her for now parents. Dahlia described it this way for Elmo.
Well, Elmo, sometimes even mommies and daddies need some help taking care of their children. Carly's mommy's been having a hard time, so we are her foster parents, or her for now parents. We will keep her safe until her mommy can take care of her again.
Well, when will Carly's mommy be back?
Well, we don't know for sure when that will be, but what we do know is Carly belongs here for now. We want her here with us.
Carly's appearance on Sesame Street got us thinking about foster care here in Wisconsin, how children end up being placed with for-now parents, and how the system works to provide them with safe and healthy places to live.
Ellen Smith joins us now. She's a clinical associate professor at the UW-Madison School of Social Work and has worked in child welfare for over 25 years, including working in child protective services as a social worker. Ellen, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
So we just heard that clip from Sesame Street explaining that Carly is living for her for-now parents. And I think Carly did a pretty good job of explaining to both kids and adults what fostering is all about. But what would you add to what she said to really help people understand what foster care is?
Well, I think she got it exactly right. Foster care is intended to be a temporary situation where kids can stay and be safe while their parents work on their own problems that prevent them from parenting.
And on average, how many children are living in foster care here in Wisconsin at any given time?
Well, that's an interesting question because the rates of foster care placements have actually been increasing in Wisconsin. And so back in 2012, we had about 6,000 kids here in the state who were placed in care. And in 2018, we were up to about 8,000.
And so what do you attribute that change to?
Most people attribute this change, and we do see this nationally, as a result of the challenges that have been facing families with the opioid crisis. In addition to that, there are other challenges that are related to poverty that also can impact a parent's stress and their ability to safely care for their kids.
And do we have a further breakdown by age of how that compares when we're talking about young kids versus older kids?
Sure. So the average age of kids in foster care is about 5 years old, and the reason that that is the average is because the largest proportion of kids in the state of Wisconsin, this is from 2017, the 2017 Child Abuse and Neglect Report, the biggest age group was that 2 to 4 age range. And when you think about that, that makes a lot of sense because kids are mobile at that age. They still are completely dependent on adults for caregiving. And so that puts them at the highest risk for child abuse and neglect. We often think of infants as being in foster care. Only about 15% of the children in foster care are 0 to 1. And then it breaks down at about 15% in each of those subsequent age groups, with the lowest number of children in care being those almost adults, those 17 to 21-year-olds.
And I'm wondering how kids come to foster care in the first place. Are there situations where parents are saying, hey, I need help? Is it situations where children might be in a position where an agency has, you know, flag the situation as potentially dangerous or abusive, or does it kind of, you know, just depend on the situation?
It does depend on the situation. First of all, when parents do occasionally call Child Protective Services and ask for help, and in those situations, we would work really hard to keep kids in the home. In Wisconsin alone, we have about 80,000 calls to Child Protective Services every year. The majority of those are not screened in because they don't meet the requirements for child abuse and neglect. So the majority of children who are placed in out-of-home care, when you think about that large, those thousands of children, are there because they've experienced abuse or neglect, or because the situation in their home is unsafe. And when I talk about being unsafe, I mean that what's going on in that home is so significant that it's likely to result in severe harm to that child. So we're not talking about minor issues that people might think of as not great parenting. We're talking about situations where caregivers can't protect children because of severe harm.
So the goal is to, as much as possible, keep kids in the home. When that's not possible, put them in foster care. And then I would imagine, you know, the next highest goal is getting them back to the biological parents. Do you find that that's usually what ends up happening?
It is usually what's happening. The majority of kids do go home. The average length of stay is less than a year in care, and that means a lot of kids go home 24 hours, 48 hours afterwards. So whenever we have a situation where a social worker goes in and does an assessment of a family and says, like, this kid is unsafe, the first thing that they would do is to try to control the situation, put something in place so that that kiddo doesn't have to leave their home. So services in the home, or have somebody who's a danger to the child leave, maybe have another caregiver move in. If that's not possible, before looking at foster care, we would look at relatives. You know, it's a pretty typical situation for kids to go stay with their grandma and grandpa for a few days, or their aunt and uncle, or maybe even their next door neighbor. So foster care would be the third most likely thing to happen if we can't keep a kid safe in their home.
We're talking right now with Ellen Smith. She is a clinical associate professor at the UW-Madison School of Social Work, and we're talking about what the foster care system looks like here in Wisconsin. And Ellen, it must be difficult for children who are suddenly living with a new family, even if it is a safer and more reliable place to be. I'm going to play another clip from Sesame Street. Here's Carly dealing with the uncertainty of being in foster care.
And then we get to sit right next to each other because my place is right here. What? Oh, no. My placemat, it's gone.
What?
Oh, I'm sure it's here somewhere, honey.
Yeah, don't worry, Carly. Oh.
No. I don't have a place.
Oh, sweetheart.
Carly, why is Carly so sad?
I don't really want to tell you about it.
So, Ellen, kind of a complex situation going on there. What stood out to you in that exchange?
Well, I think that Carly is really struggling with figuring out where her place is. She's, you know, moved into a new family, and all the rules are different, and the parents are different, and everything that's familiar to her is gone. And this is a very common experience for children who are placed in foster care.
And kids are pretty resilient, but I would imagine that this has to be a significant change for them when they do go into foster care. As you said, now they have different parents, the rules are a little bit different, they're in a different environment. What can you tell us about the biggest challenges that kids do face when they're, you know, in the situation that might be out of their control?
So you use the word resilient, and resiliency is certainly something that we want to look at for kids and families, right? But when I think about small children, I think sometimes what we really mean is kids are malleable. Mm-hmm. They adapt to their situations. It doesn't mean that they don't feel the trauma, that they don't feel the grief and loss, just like anybody else would. Some of the challenges that kids face when they're placed in foster care are all the changes to those routines. Kids end up moving schools, and school can oftentimes be the safest place for a kiddo who's having some struggles at home. They have new routines. They lose their friends. They lose their family. They lose their community. They lose their extended family often, and contact with all of those things that are familiar, including, you know, maybe it's just their favorite blanket or a special toy that they have always gotten comfort from. So there's really quite a bit of loss when kiddos go into foster care.
And let's bring foster parents into the conversation as well. I'm sure they have some challenges and some barriers of their own. But I want to know, what can foster parents do to make that transition easier, to address some of the concerns that we just laid out?
So that's a great question, because being a foster parent is really takes, you know, an incredible amount of energy and compassion and commitment, and also a great sense of humor. So foster parents, some of the challenges that they face are just the logistical things, right? You know, where do I have clothes for this kid? How am I going to get this child registered for school? I have all these new service providers. How do I advocate to make sure that this kid gets the best chance that they can get? Some of the things that really help with that is working with the biological parents. We oftentimes forget about biological parents in this mix, that they're experiencing grief and loss too, and that foster parents who can work well with biological parents to make sure that they, you know, send that toy that means something to that child, or make sure that they coordinate visits so both of the adults in the family, so the foster parents and the parents are both on the same page, whether it's the same kind of food that the kids eat or the same routine or maybe reading a same storybook. So as long as foster parents can work well with biological parents, it really does help to make the impact on the kid less.
And it seems like maybe there's somewhat of an emotional burden as well. I mean, you're asking a lot of foster parents to take in kids, to love these kids, to really set them up for success, and then to kind of send them on their way. And I actually have some friends going through the foster system right now, and they're getting ready to essentially give back the kids that they've been fostering. And I know they're really struggling with that. And I'm wondering what advice we can give those parents to help deal with some of these complicated and difficult emotions when that situation arises.
I really often wonder about if we ask too much from those foster parents, because we do ask them to love these children forever and ever until as a social worker shows up and says it's time for these children to go home. And again, I would go back to, as long as you can build a relationship with the birth family, sometimes there can be great comfort for foster parents in getting to keep that relationship, or also to continue to be a part of that child's life and make sure that they're safe.
We are talking about the foster care system with Ellen Smith right now. She is a clinical associate professor at the UW-Madison School of Social Work and has worked in child welfare for many years.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you or a loved one ever been placed in foster care? What was the experience like? What did you wish that people around you understood about your experiences? Or if you work in child protection, give us your thoughts. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll continue that conversation in just a moment. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson.
And I'm Chris Molina. We're continuing our conversation about foster care in Wisconsin with Ellen Smith. She is a clinical associate professor at the UW-Madison School of Social Work and has worked in child welfare for many years.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you a foster parent? We want to know what the experience has been like for you and what advice you would give to others who might consider taking that step. Or if you have any questions for our guest about the foster care system, give us a call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas.org.
And Ellen, we talked earlier in the interview about some of the numbers about the kids needing foster care going up. And I'm wondering, are there enough foster homes available here in Wisconsin to meet that demand?
We never have enough foster homes. If you think about the challenges that, you know, that face foster parents, it's a hard job. But in addition to that, that lots of children end up being adopted. And the most likely person to adopt them are their foster parents, which means we don't have them as foster parents anymore. So we are always looking for foster families to help take care of Wisconsin's kids.
We are going to go to the phones now. We've got Daniel, who is with us in Toma. Hi, Daniel.
How you doing?
Good.
I just got my daughter home after 4 years.
And how is How was that experience for you, Daniel?
Very headache. It was hard because I put my daughter in the system because she broke the rules, wouldn't go to school. And she would have technically been back in a short time, but she just kept on breaking the rules, and it just got dragged on and dragged on. She did come home short time last year, and then she broke the rules again, and then they took her back into the system. And it was harder for me because I'm a single dad. And other women, I'm sorry to say, the system helps women more than I feel like a single dad, because as a single dad, you have more, I don't know how to say, it's harder to raise a little girl.
Daniel, thank you so much for your call. And I want to pick up on that point that he made, Daniel suggesting that, you know, the system may not favor dads and single dads in particular. Ellen, have you seen anything that backs that story up?
Yeah, first of all, congratulations, Daniel, and thank you for sticking with it. Parenting is not an easy job, particularly with teenagers. It is true that it is much harder for dads. And federally, I can tell you that states fail one of the measures when they come out and when the federal government comes out to look at our child welfare systems. One of the places that we just don't do a very good job is in engaging dads and helping dads to parent kids, reaching out and working with dads as social workers. It is a real challenge. It's a challenge nationally, and it's certainly a challenge in the state of Wisconsin.
And it sounds like Daniel kind of voluntarily put his daughter kind of into the system. Is that something that we see a lot in the state of Wisconsin, people voluntarily putting children into the system?
I don't really know what the statistics are on that. I mean, I know that, you know, adolescents are more likely to pose some challenges to their parents in which they need extra supports. And so his story certainly isn't one that I haven't heard before.
Daniel, thank you again so much for the call. We've got Trevor with us now, who is in La Crosse. Hi, Trevor. Thanks for calling.
Hello. How are you guys doing?
Good. What do you want to say, Trevor?
So I just got kind of a question, really. My sisters might be very well going into foster care soon. My former stepfather, who was taking care of them, is probably going to lose custody of them. He got into trouble and facing some charges or something, and I just want to make sure that I'm going to be able to stay in contact with my little sisters because they're minors and I'm an adult, and I want to know if I'm allowed to contact their new foster parents once they get into that care, or how am I going to be able to get a hold of them because they're not even old enough where they have cell phones.
Trevor, thank you so much for that question. And we talked a little bit before about communication between, you know, parents and kids in foster care. What about this situation? Do you have any thoughts, Ellen, about how much communication might be available in this situation?
So I would really recommend that you contact your county human service office if you want to know more about a situation that's going on with a relative of yours. What I will say is that we know that kids do better when they have more adults in their lives that care about them, and that those relationships don't necessarily have to just be who their caregivers or full-time caregivers are. So we have lots of situations in which there are siblings out there or step-parents or grandparents, aunts and uncles who can be part of a child's life. Maybe they can't be their full-time caretaker, but they could be the ones that go to their, you know, soccer games or show up at the school, you know, band concert. Or even if that's not possible, if distance is a problem, write letters and stay connected. We just know that kids do better when they have connections.
Trevor, thank you so much for that call. We are talking with Ellen Smith. She's a clinical associate professor at the UW-Madison School of Social Work. We're talking about the foster system here in Wisconsin. And Ellen, I want to ask, you know, we've been talking about the demand, the importance of foster parents. Maybe there's someone listening out there right now who's thinking, hey, I'd like to give this fostering thing a shot. Who can become a foster parent and what is the process for doing that?
Great question. So you'd be surprised that lots and lots of people can become foster parents. We are looking for all different kinds of family makeups. You can be someone who has raised your children. You can be a single parent. You can be someone who's never had children before. You can be older or younger. You know, we really need all kinds of people to step up and take care of our kids.
And how important is someone like Carly on Sesame Street, who we talked about, a new character, who someone who is going through the foster care system? How important is it to have that representation, especially on television, for both kids and both biological and foster parents?
So one of the things I really appreciate about Sesame Street is that they do introduce characters that help us build empathy and kindness and understanding for people whose families don't look like ours. Being a foster child can be very isolating, and so it can be really helpful to have a character on TV so that maybe a foster child doesn't feel so isolated, or maybe another kiddo who's in their class will understand a little bit more about what it's like to be a foster kid and reach out and make friends with them.
I think we have time for one more call, so we'll go to Ben in Two Rivers. Hi, Ben. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to comment my wife's grandparents were foster parents back in the 40s, and they had a lot of kids come and go through their house, and it took an emotional toll on my grandmother-in-law. They ended up adopting the last kid that they fostered, and then after that, my grandfather-in-law said, okay, we're only taking troubled youth in their teens, and they kind of had like a Boys Town program at their house where you had to be before a judge, and the Miller house was your last stop before juvie, your last chance to turn around.
Ben, thank you so much for that call. And, you know, one thing that Ben said there, he was talking about how he had you know, a family doing foster care all the way dating back to the 40s. And I would imagine the big difference between then and now is the amount of resources that are available. You know, Sesame Street didn't exist in the 40s. The internet didn't exist in the 40s. Talk about the amount of resources that are available now to foster parents and where people can turn for support if they have questions during the entire process.
Sure. They can go to the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families if they want more information about how to become a foster parent. And yes, we're always working on new resources. The other thing I just want to say in response to the caller is that older kids need foster homes too. We have lots and lots of great teenagers that are also looking for a place to belong. And foster care isn't just for those kids who are five and under.
And I would imagine in your work, you've heard a lot of success stories throughout the years. Is there any particular story that sticks with you, you know, years later of a story that just went particularly well?
Sure. I have lots of those and just love the work. So, you know, occasionally you have those magical foster homes that are able to forge such a relationship with the biological parents that the kids can go home and go back and forth between the two households. So even when the parent might struggle with something again, because these things happen over time, that they have a soft spot to land and a true partnership in not just taking care of the child, but also taking care of a parent, too.
And one other thing that, you know, I just happened to see on the internet today is singer Susan Boyle, who is famously on American Idol, just recently said, you know, she's interested in fostering. You know, she says she has this big empty house. She's interested in possibly filling it. Is it important to have people like that speaking out, people who, you know, may have a big fan base or something? And is it important to have people like that saying, yes, I want to be a foster parent?
Absolutely. It's a hard job. Working with kids who've been traumatized is hard, hard work. And it can feel very overwhelming at times. And so anything that we can do as a community to support foster parents, to support biological parents, and also to support our workforce of social workers who are trying to do this difficult work, we absolutely will take it all in.
Well, Ellen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Ellen Smith is a clinical associate professor at the UW-Madison School of Social Work, and she was with us to talk about the foster care system here in Wisconsin.
Coming up after the news, Habitat for Humanity is proposing a new mixed-income housing development in Sun Prairie. We talked to the group's leader about the project and what it could mean for the area. I'm Jay Carlisle-Larson.
And I'm Chris Molina. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Jay Carlisle-Larson.
And I'm Chris Molina. Coming up, a proposal from a radio industry group would relax the rules governing how many commercial stations a company can own in a given market. We'll talk about the impact it could have on musicians and listeners.
First, affordable housing has become a leading issue in cities throughout the country. As the cost to rent or buy continues to go up, many people have had a difficult time finding a place to live in their price range.
Wisconsin is looking to tackle affordable housing head-on, and now they're proposing their biggest project yet, a mixed-income development in Sun Prairie with more than 125 houses.
Valerie Rank is CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Dane County. Valerie, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
So can you give us sort of the lay of the land here, no pun intended, about where this project came from?
So Habitat for Humanity has been working in Dane County for 31 years. We've helped almost 300 families attain home ownership, so we've been doing this for a while. Our concern is that 1 in 8 kids lives in poverty, and we want to make sure that they have access to a better life. So obviously housing is a big part of that. So we have done, besides those homes, we've done 7 large-scale neighborhoods. We like to do the large-scale neighborhoods because they're efficient. We obviously use a volunteer model. Everybody knows about volunteering for Habitat. So we try to do at least 3 homes at a time. Now, land is a big problem for all the builders, not just Habitat. The for-profit builders have been fighting for land for years, and we were the first ones to be able to kind of be locked out of that. So we found pretty soon that we had to move from just being a house builder to being a developer so we could have land on which to build our houses. Now, that said, we will rehab houses, especially in Madison. There's not much land left. You got to rehab houses, and that's great because that's environmentally stable. But the most efficient, cost-effective way to build homes is to buy large tracts of land and develop them. So that's what we are doing for the seventh time now as Habitat here in Dane County.
So this is the goal is to have this as a mixed income. It's not just low-income housing. It's not just housing for, as most people would see, development throughout, I would say, the South Central area as being kind of fancy. So what will this look like? I know it's in its earliest stages, but what can we expect to see with this development itself?
Thanks, JC. As I mentioned, we've done this several times before, and so we've had a couple different models. And again, the mixed income approach really does seem to be the best way. By the time our families get through with their training, paying their mortgages, all their sweat equity, as we call it, they just want to be a homeowner. They don't want to be an ongoing, you know, management. They just want to own a home and be a neighbor like the rest of us. So it works really well to blend affordable housing in with workforce housing, right? And that's what employers want too. They want to find reliable folks who will work for them and not be moving every couple of years. So it's great. We've done neighborhoods in Madison, Fitchburg, Sun Prairie, Stoughton, and this will be a nice project for us that we can have some scale that'll be cost effective. And we'll have about 40% of the neighborhood that we'll keep back for our families. So we'll have plenty of room to build over the next several years. But 60% will be sold on the open market, and that's great for two reasons. First, that will give us the income we need to put in the streets and the roads. But again, it gives us that mixed income. Those will probably be a little higher price point so that we'll have that workforce housing. So employers in Sun Prairie are pretty excited about this too. So it'll be kind of a middle rate type of lot. So folks can come in and build a middle price point house, and that'll be a nice mixed income property.
You mentioned that this is now the seventh project that the Dane County Habitat for Humanity has, you know, embarked on. You know, as we mentioned earlier, affordable housing is really a hot button issue right now. How does this fit into the overall scheme of making housing? You've mentioned that there's sweat equity. This is a low interest rate mortgage for many of these people. But how do you see this working in sort of the grander scheme of making housing more attainable for people?
So affordable housing is a full continuum. Everything from, you know, getting folks off the street when they're homeless to subsidized rent to our end of the market that is home ownership. Our group are people who are stable renters. They're in good, stable housing and they're making their payments every month. They just wouldn't able to ever purchase a home. And usually their biggest impediment is that down payment.
Sure.
So we think it's really important to have home ownership on that compendium of that full being an important goal for two reasons. First, every time we move somebody to home ownership, that opens up some of the more affordable rentals for other people. Second, we like to talk about stabilizing neighborhoods through home ownership. So about half of the neighborhoods we've done have been in areas that are like this one, just an area where we could get some land pretty affordable, going to be in what we call a fairly complete neighborhood where, you know, we hope to have grocery stores and other amenities. But half of the neighborhoods where Habitat here in Dane County has built have been in neighborhoods that really needed the stabilization that Habitat builds. One example is one that we're working on right now. It's also in Sun Prairie, Vandenberg Heights. There's a lot of county housing there, a lot of rentals there. And frankly, it was an area that had some issues. And the city's been very happy to work with us there because there's studies, both local and national, that show when you own your own home, you're more likely to vote. You get more involved in the community. Your kids are more likely to stay in school, get better grades, go on to college. It's not just good for your family. It's also good for the community. You are even less likely to be a victim of crime if you own your own home. So we like to say that it's really about building communities as well as about building families.
We are talking to Valerie Rank. She is the CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Dane County, and she's with us to talk about a new mixed income development project that her organization is working on and how it fits into the broader conversation about affordable housing. And you, as per your title, are focused on Dane County. But we know that this is a widespread thing. We know that Dane County is a little bit more expensive to live, but, you know, housing is an issue statewide. How do you see projects like this maybe working in, you know, Outagamie County, in La Crosse, all throughout the state?
Well, it's funny you mention Outagamie. My sister's on the county board there, so okay. We talk about this quite a bit. I also happen to serve on the state Habitat Board, and then there's really no national habitat. There's international habitat. So we really have a very global hat, and we think about that. And actually, I mentioned to you earlier, I used to work in microfinance. So I used to travel all over the world helping people in difficult circumstances through small loans. And that's what attracted me to this job, is everybody thinks habitat helps people through building houses. Well, there's a lot of houses that can be built or apartments that could be rented, but Habitat's magic is through a zero or low interest mortgage. People don't think that. They think, oh, you're giving away houses. No, we sell them at full appraised price, and we make it affordable through a subsidized mortgage. And that's, I think, something that's really interesting. So anyway, the question about how we link up with everybody is really kind of fun. We actually share one tax ID with the International Habitat. Mm-hmm. So all of us here have to cooperate. It's like a system, right? So we are like a franchise. And I always kind of jokingly compare us to, like, say, a McDonald's. You know, if you have a McDonald's franchise, they tell you how hot to fry the fries. So National Habitat tells us, okay, you have to have this 0% mortgage, and you have to serve everybody. You cannot, you know, discriminate. They give us some general rules like that. But they are pretty good about letting us make some local decisions. For example, when I first got here, one of the first decisions I made was that we are going to include a garage with every Habitat house. National and International Habitat is actually headquartered in Atlanta. You don't really need a garage in Atlanta. But in Wisconsin, if you want to get to work reliable, yeah, you need a garage. So they let us make some local decisions like that, too. So there are 37 local affiliates here in the state of Wisconsin. And then obviously we're all throughout the U.S., and I think we're in about 90 countries. And a little side note, Dane County is partnered with Habitat El Salvador. And we send down a work group most years to build down there, and we even support those houses. So it's kind of fun to know that we have a special connection. I've done that. We go to Huachapan. So if anybody's interested in building with Habitat, we go to our website. We can hook you up and send you down. It's kind of hot, but it's really rewarding to build in another country with Habitat.
So, you know, this is a pretty, what's the word? It's a big project that you're working on. Has there been any pushback against developments like this throughout the area?
So in the past, we've had some questions from neighbors, especially in the smaller towns. They're a little bit concerned about, who are you bringing into our neighborhood? What are your homes going to look like? I remember one neighborhood, actually it was before I came to Habitat, but I did talk to the community afterwards. Once they saw how cute and what good quality the homes were, and really building code is going to protect you from that anyway, and once they met the families, no problems. And same with Sun Prairie. The government's been very supportive because, again, they know that the employers want workforce housing. You know, some of the neighbors are having questions, but we've offered to give them tours of our houses too, and I'm sure once they meet the families and see that they'll be fine. But in general, people have been very supportive. They know that we really have a need for affordable and workforce housing, so we've really been very lucky.
So this project is still pending approval, but, you know, if it is approved, what kind of timeline are we looking at here?
So next, actually, we hope that this fall we could start, but really next spring the most would be done as far as, you know, the streets and the roads. And then the following spring we could actually start building houses.
Oh, great. So pretty quick turnaround there. Well, Valerie, thank you so much for giving us an overview of this project.
Thank you.
Valerie Rank is the CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Dane County. We talked to her about affordable housing solutions and the project her organization is working on in the Madison area.
Coming up, Summerfest kicks off later this week, and we'll be taking a look at some of the big acts coming to stages in Milwaukee and beyond.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Is there an artist you're excited to see this year? If you attend Summerfest, do you go with one act in mind, or do you wander around to try to discover new music? Do you have a favorite Summerfest or just summer music festival memory in general? We want to hear from you. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson.
And I'm Chris Molina. Coming up, a new proposal could change how many commercial radio stations a single company can own. We'll find out what it could mean for musicians and for listeners.
But first, Summerfest kicks off this Wednesday in Milwaukee. The Marathon Music Festival runs from June 26th to the 30th, and then from July 2nd to the 7th.
There's more than 800 acts taking the stage from almost every genre, and we'll be talking about some of our favorites, but we want to hear from you, too.
Will you be heading to Summerfest this year? If so, who are you excited to see? Are you trying to pack in a bunch of shows, or do you have one concert that your heart is set on? What's your Summerfest strategy? Do you camp out at one stage, or do you walk the grounds to find new bands? Do you have a favorite Summerfest memory? We want to hear from you. Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org.
And speaking of Summerfest memories, we already have a caller calling in wanting to share one. David joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, David.
Hi.
How's it going?
Hey, it's going good. I could talk about Summerfest for hours. I love it. But a particular memory I wanted to share was in 2015, I saw this band that I had heard of for a while, and I really love going to concerts, and they're called Umphrey's McGee. And I saw them in 2015, and since then I've seen them about 50 times. And
oh, wow.
It kind of changed my life, actually, and it was just kind of a chance that I happened to think to go to this show that night. It was pretty awesome.
What stood out to you about the group?
So they're a jam band, and they're incredibly technical. The reason why people go to see these bands all the time continuously is because the show isn't the same. Every night it changes. For instance, last night they actually played a show in Colorado, and they played with Jason Bonham's son, or John Bonham of Led Zeppelin's. His son played drums with them, and they did a whole Led Zeppelin set. They're awesome.
David, I'm curious. It sounds like this band kind of operates like fish, and so do their fans, in that they like to travel around. What's the farthest that you've traveled to go and see this band?
The farthest I ever saw them was in St. Louis. They do a big Halloween show every year, and it was at the Pageant Theater. I saw them in St. Louis, but people go everywhere. They're actually playing in Iceland next year, too.
All right, David. Well, we're going to have to check that out. Thank you so much for the call, and we are taking your calls on Summerfest memories, favorite bands, shows that you're excited about. Give us a call now at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Well, JC, I know that there is one artist that you're kind of pumped up about. They're playing one of the free stages this Thursday, and that is Lizzo. Let's take a listen to a bit of her hit song, Truth Hurts. Chick, I put the sting in single. Ain't worried about a ring on my finger. So you can tell your friend. Shoot your shot when you see him. It's okay, he already in my DM. Why men gray till they gotta be gray? Don't text me, tell it straight. Okay, so I gotta admit, I don't know much about Lizzo. I've heard you and other people who were here talk about her. What's got you excited about this one, JC?
You know, she's just a really great performer. She performed last night at the BET Awards, and people kind of lost their mind. She actually performed this song, which is why it was in my head this morning. You know, she's just a really great performer. Her music is really good and fun. And, you know, she's from Minnesota, so a little bit of, you know, interstate rivalry there. She sings about the Minnesota Vikings, which got bleeped out in a in a Green Bay area, I believe, radio station is, you know, a little push. So it's always fun to listen to Lizzo in particular. So,
and you've seen her in concert before?
I have not.
You have not. Okay.
I am a little. Yeah.
You may have just said that and I wasn't listening.
No. I did not. I didn't tell you that at all.
Well, also coming up later during Summerfest on Thursday, the American Family Insurance Amphitheater is hosting a Outlaw Music Festival. That sounds fun. And it includes Willie Nelson, who is still performing. Here's a little bit from his latest album, a cover of the classic, It's Hard to Be Humble.
Oh, Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect. In every way, I can't wait to look in the mirror, 'cause I
So, Chris, there are always a few artists that are in the sort of legendary camp at Summerfest. And, you know, Willie Nelson has been to Wisconsin a lot over the years. And I believe that he's singing this with his sons, which is kind of cool.
Well, that's pretty cool. And I'm glad that you mentioned musical legends coming to Summerfest. You know, we were sharing Summerfest memories today. And probably my favorite was a couple years back, I think this was 2016. My friend asked me if I'd be interested in going to see Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers at Summerfest, which is something that we had done before. We'd seen him at Summerfest. We'd seen him in Minneapolis. And I kind of thought, oh, well, do I want to go a third time? I got to drive all the way to Milwaukee on a weeknight. Am I going to do this? And finally, I was like, yeah, you know what? We had a lot of fun the last couple of times we went. So, you know, why not? Like, let's just go to this concert. So we went to the concert. Chris Stapleton was the opener.
Oh,
he
wow.
was great. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers played an awesome show. I was really glad that I went. And that was just, turns out, months before he died. So I was really glad to have that experience with my friend, seeing Tom Petty one last time at Summerfest. So I don't think I'm going to be able to replicate that experience, but hey, seeing Willie Nelson might be kind of cool. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Willie Nelson would be a great person to see. And of course, we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you ever gotten lucky at Summerfest in that you got to see a band that you wanted to see or that you never thought you would see, and they were here and you had the opportunity that Chris did where he could just leave after work? We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234.
And here's another band that's going to be playing at Summerfest, Churches. Here's a little bit of their song, Deliverance.
Careful when you're telling us about obsession, saying that we're never free. You better hold on, hold on, hold on.
So yeah, that was Churches. They hit the scene in the United States a couple of years ago and really blew up for people who are really into indie and electronic music. You know, they're, I believe, from Scotland and just really had a meteoric rise. So I was really excited to see them on the list of lineups. So it was really cool, and I'm glad that they're going to be here.
And this is Churches with a V.
With a V.
Not a U. So I definitely had to go to a producer and say, is this pronounced Churches or is it, you know, Churches? Or yeah, so I'm glad
so
I got clarity.
So we got
Thank
some
you.
Clarity there.
You,
let's go back to our calls. We have AC in Monroe. AC, thank you so much for calling. What do you want to share?
Yeah, I got a memory and soon-to-see event coming to this Summerfest this year.
What is that memory?
So the memory is the group Rodrigo y Gabriela, and they are now returning to Summerfest. I haven't seen them at a Summerfest since I seen them the first time a good 7 years ago.
I feel like I know people that were very into Rodrigo y Gabriela. When I worked in Detroit, they had a big sort of showing there. So that's really great that you got to see them, and that's the band that you recommend. Are there any other bands that you want to check out while Summerfest is happening?
I mean, I think that's kind of like my number one that I'm going to have to see. And I just checked out the lineup. I mean, I saw more than a handful of different artists and different genres and things. And I think that's the coolest thing about Summerfest, is that you're not tied down to just one genre of music. So,
well, AC, thank you so much. That was AC and Monroe talking about the bands he wants to see. We have a lot of callers on the air, so let's go to Sarah in Madison. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I have a really old memory. Before Summerfest built the new big fancy stage where I saw Lilith Fair, Steve Goodman, Bonnie Raitt, and Elvin Bishop all in the same show. And then between sets, I wandered around to the free music and got to see Dizzy Gillespie. And it
Whoa,
was
wow.
like, it was like so fun. And when I was a lot younger, I used to not work in the summer. So I would just go and take the bus over to Summerfest pretty much every day.
I'm trying to wrap my mind around the fact that Dizzy Gillespie was at a free stage.
Oh, yeah, that blows
my
mind.
Oh,
my
goodness. Can't even believe that. Sarah, thank you so much for that. We've got more callers, so let's go now to TJ, who is in Clinton. Hi, TJ.
Hey, how are we doing today?
Good. What did you want to tell us about Summerfest, TJ?
So you guys were talking about the Outlaw Music Festival there at Summerfest and seeing Willie Nelson. Me and my wife and friends actually went and saw that last year. We went for Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats, which is kind of a newer up-and-coming band. Really cool to see them. But I was very impressed with, you know, how well Willie Nelson is still performing and, you know, having his kids on stage with him. It was more than I bargained for. It was a real treat to see Willie. So, I mean, when you guys were talking about it, I just wanted to throw my two cents in there and say anybody that's got a chance to see Willie, that's definitely a worthwhile show.
TJ, are you going to be going back to see him again this year?
Unfortunately, not this year. I'm on working all week, both weeks, and on call for one of them. So I don't get the opportunity to go to Milwaukee this year.
Well, hopefully you'll get a chance to see him again at some point, TJ. Yeah, it seems like Willie Nelson is one of the big groups that we get the opportunity to see when they're here in Wisconsin.
He's still touring, so, you know, good on him, and I hope it. I hope he just keeps going strong. And you know what? Keep your comments going strong, too. We're out of time for this caller segment, but head on over to the Ideas Network Facebook page, let us know, or email us. What concerts have you seen at Summerfest? What concerts are you excited about seeing this year? And what are your favorite Summerfest memories? Keep them coming. Just send an email to ideas@wpr.org, or you can also tweet us. We are at Central Time WPR. Keep those stories coming.
If you visit any Wisconsin-owned brewery, you are bound to see patrons enjoying flights. This is a really popular option, which allows the drinker to try out a bunch of different flavors all at once. And now that concept could be coming to another Wisconsin staple, cheese.
Yeah, so apparently big box retailer Costco is selling in some markets cheese flights. Get this, cheese flights. So five small chunks of cheese, all prepackaged in a nice little thing. And I'm wondering, JC, are you on board for this new exciting era of cheese consumption?
I'm pretty much on board with any era of cheese consumption. So from, you know, just breaking off a block of
just eating
cheese.
Off the block.
Yeah, just, you know, really being very into cheese. Is it something I would buy? Maybe. I think so. I like having options available.
There's something to be said for it having right there for you. I mean, I like getting a variety of different cheeses. I know some stores around here will let you get the little, I think they call them like cheese orphans. So like they're the little tiny chunks of cheese that like either fell off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so you can get a bunch of those and you can try them out. But what I like about this cheese flight is they have like actual like suggestions for wine pairings on there, because that takes a lot of the guesswork out of it.
Oh, yeah. I'm terrible at that. When it really comes down to it, if you asked me to put together a cheese platter, I couldn't do it, but we do know that our friend and colleague Dean Knetter definitely could if it really came down to it. But I do like the idea of sort of a lazy cheese plate.
Yellow cheese, red wine. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Well, this is Central Time. Stay with us. There's more to come on the Ideas Network.